Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Freaks and Geeks. If this is your first time joining us, please head on over to our Facebook and give us a like. Let us know what you did and you didn't like about the show tonight, and, of course, share it with your friends. Or, hey, make a few new ones on our page. Now, tonight, it'll be your Mistress of Magic, Carrie.
Oh, hey.
Oh, hey. Your devilish dynamo, Chris.
Oh, yeah, you know me. I'm back in the saddle again, just keeping it real. I know my caramel tones were missed last week, but, you know, I'm back and better than ever. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay. And me. Hey, okay. Stacy has elected to sit this one out due to her religious beliefs, and we all fully support that. To us, part and parcel of being a part of the paranormal community is recognizing where your lines in the sand are. While growth is good, we would almost never advocate someone doing anything they feel fundamentally uncomfortable with. In addition to all of that, Stacy also got an opportunity to participate in a really important church/community meeting tonight. And when she listens to this, we just want her to know that we're thinking about her and she has our full support.
Yeah, knock up that, Stacy.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. You got this. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
God, Christopher. Well, tonight we are jam-freaking-packed full of information, so we're just going to go right ahead and jump into our topic. We have a lot to cover. This article, which is we're going to read this article because honestly, like doing all the research, this article was the shit, like 100%, and we got that from the Smithsonian. We are actually going to post the link to it on our page in case people want to reference it or read about it later, but honestly, it's fucking the bomb. So we're just going to not mess with perfection.
So in February 1891, the first few advertisements started appearing in papers. Ouija, the wonderful talking board, boomed a Pittsburgh toy and novelty shop, describing a magical device that answered questions about the past, present, and future with marvelous accuracy, and promised never-failing amusement and recreation for all the classes, a link between the known and unknown, the material and immaterial. Another advertisement in a New York newspaper declared it interesting and mysterious, and testified, as proven at the patent office before it was allowed, price $1.50. Though truth in advertising is hard to come by, especially in products from the 19th century, the Ouija board was interesting and mysterious. It actually had been proven to work at the patent office before its patent was allowed to proceed, and today, even psychologists believe that it may offer a link between the known and the unknown. The real history of the Ouija board is just about as mysterious as how the game itself works. Ouija historian Robert Murch, career goals, has been researching the story of the board since 1992. When he started his research, he says, no one really knew anything about its origins, which struck him as odd. For such an iconic thing that strikes both fear and wonder in American culture, how can no one know where it came from? The Ouija board, in fact, came straight out of the American 19th century obsession with spiritualism, the belief that the dead are able to communicate with the living. Spiritualism, which had been around for years in Europe, hit America hard in 1848 with the sudden prominence of the Fox Sisters of upstate New York. The Foxes claimed to receive messages from spirits who rapped on the walls in order to answer questions, recreating this feat of channeling in parlors across the state. Aided by the stories about the celebrity sisters and other spiritualists in the new national press, spiritualism reached millions of adherents at its peak in the second half of the 19th century. Spiritualism worked for Americans. It was compatible with Christian dogma, meaning one could hold a seance on Saturday night and have no qualms about going to church the next day. It was an acceptable, even wholesome activity to contact spirits at seances through automatic writing or table-turning parties, in which participants would place their hands on a small table and watch it begin to shake and rattle, while they all declared that they weren't moving it. The movement also offered solace in an era when the average lifespan was less than 50. Women died in childbirth, children died of disease, and men died in war. Even Mary Todd Lincoln, wife of the venerable president, conducted seances in the White House after their 11-year-old son died of a fever in 1862. During the Civil War, spiritualism gained adherents in droves, people desperate to connect with loved ones who'd gone away to war and never come home. Christopher?
Chris is talking to himself over here. He hasn't taken himself on off mute yet.
I
just want to say that number one, the price of $1.50 is freaking insane, and I would have bought all the Ouija boards up. And number two, hell yes, Ouija historian life goals. And number three, just giving some kudos and some props to old Lady Lincoln.
Yes.
Man, I'm back.
Christopher.
God help us.
I
thought we were
going
to have to break out a Ouija board to communicate with you.
I mean, let's make it freaking, you know, relevant.
She just did.
Oh, man. So, so that $1.50 that it used to cost, I think it would cost about $35 in today's money.
Wow.
Well, I don't have $35 today, but past April would have had a lot of $1.50s.
Oh, alrighty. Well, as we continue on our journey, communicating with the dead was common. It wasn't seen as bizarre or weird, explains Merch. It's hard to imagine that now. We look at that and think, why are you opening the gates of hell? But opening the gates of hell wasn't on anyone's mind when they started the Kennard Novelty Company, the first producers of the Ouija board. In fact, they were mostly looking to open Americans' wallets, just trying to make a buck, you know what I'm saying? Capitalism. As spiritualism had grown in American culture, so too did frustration with how long it took to get any meaningful message out of the spirits, says Brendan Hodge, spiritualism historian. Calling out the alphabet and waiting for a knock at the right letter, for example, was deeply boring. After all, rapid communication with breathing humans at far distances was a possibility. The telegraph had been around for decades. Why shouldn't spirits be as easy to reach? People were desperate for methods of communication that would be quicker. While several entrepreneurs realized that, it was the Kennard Novelty Company that actually nailed it. The Ouija board, not even born out of wanting to communicate with people, just born out of, I need money.
So in 1886, the fledgling Associated Press reported on a brand new phenomena taking over the spiritualist camps in Ohio, the talking board. It was, for all intents and purposes, a Ouija board with letters, numbers, and a planchette-like device to point to them. The article went far and wide, but it was Charles Kennard of Baltimore, Maryland, who acted on it. In 1890, he pulled together a group of four other investors, including Elijah Bond, a local attorney, and Colonel Washington Bowie, a surveyor, to start the Kennard Novelty Company to exclusively make and market these new talking boards. None of the men were spiritualists, really, but all of them were keen businessmen, and they'd identified a niche. But they didn't have the Ouija board yet. The Kennard Talking Board lacked a name. Contrary to popular belief, Ouija is not a combination of the French for yes, oui, and German, ya. Yeah. Merch says, based on his research, it was Bond's sister-in-law, Helen Peters, who Bond said was a strong medium, who supplied the now instantly recognizable handle. Sitting around the table, they asked the board what they should call it. The name Ouija came through, and when they asked what that meant, the board replied, good luck.
eerie and cryptic, but for the fact that Peters acknowledged that she was wearing a locket bearing a picture of a woman, the name Ouija, above her head. That's the story that emerged from the Ouija founder's letters. It's very possible that the woman in the locket was famous author and popular women's rights activist Ouida, who Peters admired, and that Ouija was just a misreading of that. According to Murch's interviews with the descendants of the Ouija founders and the original Ouija patent file itself, what she's seen, the story of the board's patent request was true, knowing it is, that if they couldn't prove that the board worked, they wouldn't get their patent. Bond brought indispensable Peters to the patent office in Washington with him when he filed his application. There, the chief patent officer demanded a demonstration. If the board could accurately spell out his name, which was supposed to be unknown to Bond and Peters, he'd allow the patent application to proceed. They all sat down, communed with the spirits, and the planchette faithfully spelled out the patent officer's name. Whether or not it was mystical spirits or the fact that Bond, as a patent attorney, may have just known the man's name, well, that's unclear, Murch says. But on February 10, 1891, a white-faced, invisibly shaken patent officer awarded Bond a patent for his new toy or game. The first patents offered no explanation as to how the device works, just asserts that it does. That ambiguity and mystery was part of a more or less conscious marketing effort. These were very shrewd businessmen, notes Murch. The less the Kennard Company said about how the board worked, the more mysterious it seemed, and the more people wanted to buy it. Ultimately, it was a moneymaker. They didn't care why people thought it worked.
And it was a moneymaker. By 1892, the Kennard Novelty Company had three in Baltimore, to two in Baltimore, two in New York, two in Chicago, and one in London. And by 1893, Kennard and Bond were out, owing to some internal pressures and the old adage about money changing everything. By this time, William Fold, who'd gotten in on the ground floor of the fledgling company as an employee and stockholder, was running the company. Notably, Fold is not and never claimed to be the inventor of the board, though even his obituary in the New York Times declared him to be. Also notably, Fold died in 1927 after a freak fall from the roof of his new factory, a factory he said the Ouija board told him to build. In 1898, with the blessing of Colonel Bowie, the majority shareholder and one of only two remaining original investors, he licensed the exclusive rights to make the board. What followed were boom years for Fold and frustration for some of the men who'd been in on the Ouija board from the beginning. Public squabbling over who'd really invented it played out in the pages of the Baltimore Sun, while their rival boards launched and failed. In 1919, Bowie sold the remaining business interest in Ouija to Fold, his protege, for $1. The board's instant, and now, more than 120 years later, prolonged success showed that it had tapped into a weird place in American culture. It was marketed as both mystical oracle and as family entertainment, fun with an element of otherworldly excitement. This meant that it wasn't only spiritualists who bought the board. In fact, the people who disliked the Ouija board the most tended to be spirit mediums, as they just found out that their job as spiritual middleman had been cut out. The Ouija board appealed to people from across a wide spectrum of ages, professions, and education. Mostly, Murch claims, because the Ouija board offered a fun way for people to believe in something. People want to believe. The need to believe that something else is out there is powerful, he says. This thing is one of those things that just allows them to express that belief.
Oh, man, just loving the Ouija board. I love how the Ouija board told the man to build the building, and then it kills him.
Killed him? Yeah. Well, I have no more need of you.
Yeah. Well, I'm out there already. You know what's interesting is that I just took a peek at the Kennard Novelty Company, and they made nothing else. It's a Ouija board. That's it. I guess when you're... your one-hit wonder is that big, you don't need anything.
Yeah. If it ain't broke, don't fix it and all that.
The Ouija board will break it for you.
Yeah. But, I mean, you're fine.
Yeah. It's quite logical, then, that the board would find its greatest popularity in uncertain times when people hold fast to belief and look for answers from just about anywhere, especially cheap DIY oracles. The 1910s and 20s, with the devastations of World War I and the manic years of the Jazz Age and Prohibition, witnessed a surge in Ouija popularity. It was so normal that in May 1920, Norman Rockwell, illustrator of blissful 20th century domesticity, depicted a man. And thank you. I appreciate it. I got a word right. Depicted a man and a woman, Ouija board on their knees, communicating with the beyond on the cover of the Saturday Evening Post. During the Great Depression, the Fold Company opened new factories to meet demand for the boards. Over 5 months in 1944, a single New York department store sold 50,000 of them. 1967. Yeah. How many factories do you need to just sell Ouija boards?
I don't know. A lot, I guess.
I wonder. Maybe they're infusing them with the spiritual essence.
like the masks in Halloween 3.
Yeah. The year after Parker's Brothers bought the game from the Fold Company, 2 million boards were sold, outselling Monopoly. That same year saw more American troops in Vietnam, the counterculture summer of love in San Francisco, and race riots in Newark, Detroit, Minneapolis, and Milwaukee. Strange Ouija tales also made frequent titillating experiences in American newspapers. In 1920, National Wire Services reported that would-be crime solvers were turning to their Ouija boards for clues in the mysterious murder of a New York City gambler, Joseph Burton Elwell, much to the frustration of the police. In 1921, the New York Times reported that a Chicago woman being sent to a psychiatric hospital tried to explain to the two doctors that she wasn't suffering from mania, but that Ouija spirits had told her to leave her mother's dead body in the living room for 15 days before burying her in the backyard. She might be crazy.
It's possible.
In 1930, newspaper readers thrilled to accounts of two women in Buffalo, New York, who'd murdered another woman, supposedly on the encouragement of the Ouija board messages. In 1941, a 23-year-old gas station attendant from New Jersey told the New York Times that he joined the Army because the Ouija board told him to do so. In 1958, a Connecticut court decided not to honor the, quote, Ouija board will of Mrs. Helen Dow Peck, who left only $1,000 to two former servants and an insane $152,000 to Mr. John Gale Forbes, a lucky but bodiless spirit who contacted her via the Ouija board. I mean, Ouija board's making people do some crazy shit.
Sounds like it.
I mean, I need a Ouija board to tell somebody to give me some money.
Please.
Yeah, we'll take it to court.
Put me on that list.
Ouija boards, yes. Ouija boards even offered literary inspiration. In 1916, Miss Pearl Curran made headlines when she began writing poems and stories that she claimed were dictated via Ouija board by the spirit of a 17th century English woman called Patience Worth. Now, my question is, did she give credit to the author or what? I'm willing to bet not. The following year, Curran's friend, Emily Grant Hutchings, claimed that her book, Jap Herron, was communicated via Ouija board by the late Samuel Clemens, better known as Mark Twain. Curran earned significant success. Hutchings less, but neither of them achieved the heights that Pulitzer Prize-winning poet James Merrill did. In 1982, his epic Ouija-inspired program, inspired and dictated poem, The Changing Light at Sandover, won the National Book Critics Circle Award. Merrill, for his part, publicly implied that the Ouija board acted more as a magnifier for his own poetic thoughts. rather than a hotline to the spirit. In 1979, after he wrote Mirabelle, Books of Number, another Ouija creation, he told the New York Review of Books, "If the spirits aren't external, how astonishing the mediums become." Ouija existed on the periphery of American culture, perennially popular, mysterious, interesting, and usually, barring the few cases of supposed Ouija-inspired murders, non-threatening. That is, until 1973.
Dun, dun, dun.
Such a good year. Jesus Christ. In that year, The Exorcist scared the pants off people in theaters with all that pea soup and head spinning and supposedly based on a true story business, and the implication that 12-year-old Reagan was possessed by a demon after playing with the Ouija board by herself changed how people saw the board. It's kind of like Psycho. No one was afraid of showers until that scene. It's a clear line, says Murch, explaining that before The Exorcist, film and TV depictions of the Ouija board were usually jokey, hokey, and silly. I Love Lucy, for example, featured a 1951 episode in which Lucy and Ethel host a seance using a Ouija board. But for at least 10 years afterwards, it's no joke. The Exorcist actually changed the fabric of popular culture.
You don't know what Lucy and Ethel brought in to this realm with that Ouija board.
I guess not.
I mean, she's probably looking for somebody to help her at the chocolate factory.
Always goes back to the chocolate factory. Almost overnight, Ouija became a tool of the devil, and for that reason, a tool of horror writers and movie makers. It began popping up in scary movies, usually opening the door to evil spirits hell-bent on ripping apart co-eds. Outside of the theater, the following year saw the Ouija board denounced by religious groups as Satan's preferred method of communication. In 2001, in Alamogordo, New Mexico, it was being burned on bonfires alongside copies of Harry Potter and Disney's Snow White. Christian religious groups still remain wary of the board, citing scripture denouncing communication with spirits through mediums. Catholic.com calls the Ouija board far from harmless, and as recently as 2011, 700 Club host Pat Robertson declared that demons can reach us through the board. Even within the paranormal community, Ouija boards enjoyed a dodgy reputation. Murch says that when he first began speaking at paranormal conventions, he was told to leave his antique boards at home because they scared people too much. Parker Brothers, and later Hasbro after they acquired Parker Brothers in 1991, still sold hundreds of thousands of them, but the reasons why people were buying them had changed significantly. Ouija boards were spooky rather than spiritual, with a distinct frisson of danger. In recent years, Ouija is popular yet again, driven in part by economic uncertainty and the board's usefulness as a plot device. The hugely popular Paranormal Activity 1 and 2 both featured a Ouija board. It's popped up in episodes of Breaking Bad, Castle, Rizzoli and Isles, and multiple paranormal reality TV programs. Hot Topic, my favorite of gothy teens and 35-year-old mothers of two, sells a set of Ouija board bra and underwear. And for those wishing to commune with the beyond while on the go, there's an app or 20 for that. This year, Hasbro released a more mystical version of the game, replacing its old glow-in-the-dark version. For purists, Hasbro also licensed the rights to make a classic version to another company. In 2012, rumors that Universal was in talks to make a film based on the game abounded, although Hasbro refused to comment on that or anything else. But the real question is, how do Ouija boards work?
Real question is how do Ouija bra and panties work? can I take one of those little triangle thingies and like rub them on the bras and just be like, should I be doing this?
No. Goodbye.
My God. Yes.
Oh, man. I know what April's getting for Christmas.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, are you going to communicate with Zozo?
Yeah.
No.
1 week a month, it's Zozo time.
Oh, Jesus. We'll just put the Ouija panties and bra away for that period of time.
Period of time, yes.
So Ouija boards are not, scientists say, powered by spirits or even demons. Disappointing, but also potentially useful, because they're powered by us. Even when we protest that we're not doing it, we swear. Ouija boards work on a principle known to those studying the mind for more than 160 years. The ideometer effect?
Ideometer?
Ideometer? You know, potato, potato.
It's definitely ideometer.
In 1852, physician and physiologist William Ben Carpenter published a report for the Royal Institution of Great Britain examining these automatic muscular movements that take place without the conscious will or violation of the individual. Think crying in reaction to a sad film, for example. Almost immediately, other researchers saw applications of the ideometer. I think that was better. Effect in the popular spiritualist pastimes. In 1853, chemist and physicist Michael Faraday, intrigued by table turning, conducted a series of experiments that proved to him, though not to most spiritualists, that the table's motion was due to the ideometer. Oh, God, it's going to kill me every time. Action of the participants. I'm just going to call it the involuntary actions of the participants. Make it easier on myself. The effect is very convincing, as Dr. Chris French, professor of psychology and animalistic psychology at Goldsmiths University of London, explains. It is one hell of a title. Jesus Christ. It can generate a very strong impression that the movement is being caused by some outside agency, but it's not. Other devices, such as dowsing rods, or more recently, the fake bomb detection kits that deceive scores of international governments and armed services, work on the same principle of non-conscious movement. The thing about all these mechanisms we're talking about, dowsing rods, Ouija boards, pendulums, these small tables, they're all devices where whereby a quite small muscular movement can cause quite a large effect, he says. Planchettes, in particular, are well suited for their task. Many used to be constructed of a lightweight, usually lightweight wooden board and fitted with small casters to help them move more smoothly and freely. Now they're usually plastic and have felt feet, which also help it slide over the board more easily.
And with Ouija boards, you've got the whole social context. It's usually a group of people and everyone has slight influence, French notes. With Ouija, not only does the individual give up some conscious control to participate, so it can't be me, people think, but also in a group, no one person can take credit for the planchette's movements, making it seem like the answers must be coming from an otherworldly source. Moreover, in most situations, there is an expectation or suggestion the board is somehow mystical or magical. Once the idea has been implanted there, there's almost a readiness to happen. But if Ouija boards can't give us answers from beyond the veil, what can they tell us? Quite a lot, actually. Researchers at the University of British Columbia's Visual Cognition Lab think the board may be a good way to examine how the mind processes information on various levels. The idea that the mind has multiple levels of information processing is by no means a new one, although exactly what to call those levels remains up for debate. Conscious, unconscious, subconscious, preconscious, zombie mind are all terms that have been or are currently used, and all have their supporters and their detractors. For the purposes of this discussion, we'll refer to conscious as those thoughts you're basically aware that you're having. I'm reading this fascinating article. I'm tuned in to this amazing podcast with these three funny people, and non-conscious as the automatic pilot type thought, blinking, breathing, that kind of stuff. 2 years ago, Dr. Ron Rensick, professor of psychology and computer science, psychology postdoctoral researcher Helen Gachow, and Dr. Sidney Fells, professor of electrical and computer engineering, began looking at exactly what happens when people sit down to use a Ouija board. Bell says that they got the idea after he hosted a Halloween party with a fortune-telling theme and found himself explaining to several foreign students who had never really seen it before how the Ouija worked. They kept asking where to put the batteries, Fells laughed, after offering up a more Halloween-friendly mystical explanation, leaving out the ideomotor effect. He let the students play with the board on their own. When he came back, hours later, they were all still at it, although by now much more freaked out. A few days post-hangover later, Fells said he, Rensink, and a few others began talking about what is actually going on with the Ouija. The team thought the board could offer a really unique way to examine non-conscious knowledge, to determine whether ideomotor action could also express what the non-conscious knows. It was one of those things that we thought it probably won't work, but if it did work, it'd be really freaking cool, said Rensink.
Can I say that it's a weird thing for this man to be a professor of psychology and computer science? Like, those are two, like, completely different, like, disciplines.
Hey, you know, he's just multifaceted.
I mean, it's good to be branch out, I guess.
Sounds like the kind of man we would enjoy being friends with.
I mean, probably. I do find it interesting that, like, these three individuals, like, seem to have, you have one person, psychology, computer science, another person, electrical and computer engineering. Like, they're coming, obviously going to be coming at it from a very technical mindset of trying to figure out how the Ouija works. So interesting that those are the disciplines that these people have that are coming to it.
I think that's who I'd want trying to figure out how it works, but also I don't think I want to know what my non-consciousness knows.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think it'd be better if they didn't try to go through it and just leave it open.
I mean, technically, you already know what your non-consciousness knows.
I don't want to be aware of what I don't want to be aware of.
I don't know what I don't know. Is that what you...
yeah, we'll go with that. So their initial experiment involved a Ouija-playing robot. Participants were told that they were playing with a person in another room via teleconferencing. The robot, they were told, mimicked the movements of the other person. In actuality, the robot's movements simply amplified the participants' motions, and the person in the other room was just a ruse, a way to get the participants to think they weren't in control. Participants were asked a series of yes or no, fact-based questions. Is Buenos Aires the capital of Brazil? Were the 2000 Olympic Games held in Sydney? And expected to use the Ouija board to answer. What the team found surprised them. When participants were asked verbally to guess the answers to their ability, they were right only around 50% of the time, a typical result for guessing. But when they answered using the board, believing that the answers were coming from someplace else, they answered correctly upwards of 65% of the time. It was so dramatic how much better they did on these questions than if they answered to the best of their ability that we were like, be much better, called Fells. It was so dramatic we couldn't believe it. The implication was, Fells explained, that one's non-conscious was a lot smarter than anyone knew. The robot, unfortunately, proved too delicate for further experiments, but the researchers were sufficiently intrigued to pursue further Ouija research. They devised another experiment. This time, rather than a robot, the participant actually played with a real human. At some point, the participant was blindfolded. The other player, really a computer, took their hands off the planchette. This meant that the participant believed he or she wasn't alone, enabling the kind of automatic pilot state the researchers were looking for, but still ensuring that the answers could only come from the participant.
You know what I say? I just say we hook up a bunch of electrodes to these people. Then let them play on it to just see if their muscles are actually moving. That'll solve it.
Hashtag Ron Paul.
So, it worked. Rinsink says, some people were complaining about how the other person was moving the planchette around. That was a good sign that we really got this kind of condition, that people were convinced that somebody else was there. The results replicated the findings of the experiment with the robot, that people knew more when they didn't think they were controlling the answers. 50% accuracies for vocal responses to 65% for Ouija responses. They reported their findings in February, in the February 2012 issue of Consciousness and Cognition. Quote, you do much better with the Ouija on questions that you really don't think you know, but actually, something inside you does know, and the Ouija can help you answer above chance, says Fells. UBC's experiments showed that the Ouija could be a very useful tool in rigorously investigating non-conscious thought processes. Quote, now that we have some hypotheses in terms of what's going on here, accessing knowledge and cognitive abilities that you don't have conscious awareness of, the Ouija board would be an instrument to actually get at that, Fells explains. Now we can start using it to ask other types of questions. Those types of questions include how much and what the non-conscious mind knows, how fast it can learn, how it remembers, even how it amuses itself, if it does. I know how mine amuses itself. This opens up even more avenues of exploration. For example, if there are two or more systems of information processes, which system is more impacted by neurodegenerative diseases, such as Alzheimer's? If it impacted the non-conscious earlier, Rinsick hypothesized, indications of the illness could show up in Ouija manipulation, possibly even before being detected in conscious thought. For the moment, researchers are working on locking down their findings in a second study and firming up protocol around the Ouija as a tool. However, they're running up against the problem, funding. Quote, the classic funding agencies don't want to be associated with us. It seems a bit too out there, says Rinsink. All the work they've done to date has been volunteer, with Rinsink himself paying for some of the experiment's costs. To get around this issue, they're looking to crowdfunding to make up the gap. Even if they don't succeed, the UBC team has managed to make good on one of the claims of the early Ouija advertisements. The board does offer a link between the known and unknown, just not the unknown they want everyone to believe that it was. Darnar, that's deep.
So I wanted to take some time here at the end, and I wanted to give each of us a chance to talk about our own beliefs about the Ouija board. So I think one of the most important things, and what this article has really kind of said, is that, Ouija didn't always have the reputation of being a board to immediately make contact with demons. Like, that's crazy. A lot of people believe that, and even a lot of people in the paranormal community believe that, but it's just a method of communication. And at this point, researchers are trying to figure out exactly what kind of communication that is. And it looks like it might just be, honestly, you communicating with your own subconscious, which is always scary, but sometimes something you kind of need to do.
You're communicating with your own spirit.
You're communicating with your own spirit.
Do you think it's generational, as far as people thinking that Ouija automatically means demons?
I think it's more cultural than, anything. I think it just, you kind of almost automatically believe whatever the people around you believe.
Yeah.
That's groupthink.
It is groupthink.
Well, I mean,
but it's
But if you're a child and your parents tell you this is what it is, then until you get older and start to research for yourself, then that's what it is.
Yeah.
Well, I know growing up, like, I knew what a Ouija board was, but never, like, I never touched one. I never even, like, looked to inquire, be like, I want to go play with this mystical thing. Like, I always knew it, like, it's a board you use to spirits talk to you through.
But did you feel, like, apprehensive about it, or like, oh, that's something that I definitely should not use, or was it more just like, eh, not interested?
More like I just wasn't interested in it. I was more interested in playing my video games on my Nintendo.
So obviously we played with them when we were kids, Carrie, and I don't think I ever had a sense of apprehension, but I also didn't grow up in any sort of formalized religion or anything like that. So I don't think that I had the frame of reference for it to even be bad. And funny enough for this, one of the first places we start out looking whenever we're going to do an episode, whenever we're going to start our research, is actually Wikipedia, which yes, we're all learned professionals, and Wikipedia in no way is our formal source, but I was really taken aback because in the very first sentence on Wikipedia, it claimed that Ouija boards were something that was primarily meant to, not even primarily, that was only used to, quote unquote, talk to demons, which couldn't be further from the truth. Even if you believe in the spiritual elements of a Ouija board, you don't have any control over who you talk to. You either are going to talk to a spirit, or you're talking to your own subconscious, or you're talking to a demon. And I don't think any of those things have to be necessarily mutually exclusive of each other.
Spiritual roulette.
Yeah, basically you are playing spiritual roulette. And, you know, it is one of those things that you have to take on with a certain level of knowledge. I certainly wouldn't give Jane and her friends a Ouija board and just kind of walk off, but at the same token, I really wouldn't be too apprehensive if years from now she asked me all about one.
I think that since I've been introduced more into the paranormal world as a being married into this family at this point, I would say that I don't choose to use a Ouija board because you hear stories of, like, this person messed with a Ouija board and they didn't close it out properly, or and then all this bad stuff started to happen with them, or they were misusing it, or some of that nature. Even though I could probably guess that those probably have maybe no correlation with each other, or maybe they do. I don't know. You probably choose just not to take that risk because I'm like, well, A, the spirit probably has 50 million other things they want to do other than talk to some 30-year-old that's just being like, what was it like back in your time?
Yeah, I think it's pretty accurate, honestly.
I don't particularly care for using a Ouija board. It's not for any real reason. It's just not my preference.
I assume if my preferred communication would be like doing what we do when we go out on an investigation, trying to get an interaction, like, you know, an EVP or God help us, maybe video or photographic evidence or something like that, where it's like something a bit more tangible, I guess, versus being like you're in a group of people and you're all just sitting there. And I think part of the allure with the Ouija board is, like, I mean, kind of what the article was saying, it's like, if you're in a group of people, nobody's going to be like, oh, that was me moving. And everybody's going to be like, no, man, that wouldn't be. Is that you? No, man, it wouldn't be. Like, God, the spirits, man. I mean, which is more fun to do if you're all sitting down, if at an activity, to have fun. Nobody wants to ruin the fun.
Yep, I can see that. I can see that too. So I personally have used Ouija boards in the past on investigations. Actually, funny enough, I was told by a psychic once to never use a Ouija board. Or, you know, it's to me, it's no different though than, you know, using a recorder or what?
Just you personally, like you should not use it, or no one should use it.
You were there.
Well, you know, I dump information just all of the time, so hit me with a refresher.
Yeah, it was,
she was thinking
it was
about her next trip to Hot Topic, okay? She wasn't concerned about what the psychic was saying.
It was Pat, and she said, you know, like, oh, have you ever used a Ouija board or a pendulum? And I said, no, I've never used either one of those. And she goes, good, well, you shouldn't. Don't use a Ouija board or a pendulum. And I was like,
did
okay.
You lie? Did you lie to the psychic?
No, I had at that point never used one. But now I've used them a handful of times, both of them, you know, pendulums and Ouija boards, and nothing's happened. So, I don't know.
So now I kind of wonder, is it like you, April, should not use this more than no one should use this?
I think psychics are at odds with Ouija boards.
I think that it depends on the Ouija board and it depends on the psychic.
I agree.
But
what if the psychic's wearing Ouija bra and panties?
She could be. She could have been
double,
at that time.
Double standard.
Then you ask her how much they were at Hot Topic and if you can get that coupon code.
Yeah.
Can you get a refer a friend bonus?
Yeah.
I mean,
matching sets. We'll get you one, too.
Oh, you're going to get me some boxer brief?
Oh,
Ouija,
no.
Ouija.
Oh, no, you misunderstand.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm
it's
going to
be the
I'm
bra
getting What are you going for Halloween? I'm a Ouija board. Scaring all the children.
Would pay good money to see that.
I would pay good money not to see it. I'm just saying. I'm not.
There are plenty of people that would pay good money not to see it.
I mean, I could be misconstrued as wearing my own shirt if I have no shirt on.
I don't know about that, but it's he's got some hair.
Is it a problem?
Some hair. I would not call it a problem per se. I mean, but if you ever bald on top, we can always just move the hair around, right? That's how that works.
Transplant.
Just
glue it on top. Well, guys, I think we have come to the end of our Ouija episode, and we can go ahead and cut a little bit early. It's about 10 minutes. But we hope you stick with us, and next week we are doing another awesome episode, and I believe we are doing it on Memento Mori.
That's right.
And Stacey will be back with us, so you'll have to get excited for her coming back to the show. So we hope you have a good week, and you know, get some Halloween candy, enjoy yourself, like kick your feet up, put on a costume, maybe dress up in leopard skin, whatever, man, whatever floats your boat.
Ooh, next Tuesday will be the day before Halloween, so, you know, keeping it extra spooky.
Yeah, I'm going to eat Halloween candy the entire night while we're on the air. It's going to happen.
You are? Ooh, hey.
Yeah, she's got
pro tip. I've got a pro tip. Salty peanuts and candy corn.
I love candy corn.
I mean,
it's me too.
Well, she also loves salty nuts, so just saying.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Bringing it down.
We will talk to everyone again next week.
Yep. See you next time.
Peace out, everybody.